You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Tuesday and welcome into another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Today's episode 401 of the show, and I say that because I wish we said it last time, but it was episode 400. That's insane. We have such great support from you listeners. I really appreciate it, and we will do our best, and I'm almost positive we'll make it to 500 this season. So thank you all for listening. But as always, I am one of the hosts of the show, Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News. And today we get to talk Jazz, and apparently the Pacers should love playing the Jazz and should play them more often. And they love scoring 121 on the Jazz. If you'll recall, one Monday ago, the Pacers played the Jazz in Indy, and that game was 121-94 Pacers. Today, it was 121-88. I say today because I just watched it, but last night, excuse me, it was 121-88. The Jazz were without Donovan Mitchell, so they really struggled to get shot creation. And really, it's just the Pacers were so complete, and it makes no sense to me why, without Vic, they really can figure it out against the Jazz, and they really can't figure it out against anybody else. But it's fun to talk about this game because a lot of things went well. A lot of not new developments, but things that haven't really been happening this season happened. And they had guys play well on both ends of the floor. So I never really know where to start when they dominate games because you really could start anywhere and get away with it. But I'm going to start with Miles Turner because he missed the last game. And I think right away we saw against the Spurs, I wish I had the stats in front of me. Ben Gibson, the other editor at 8.9 seconds, sent it to me earlier. Today, it was LaMarcus Aldridge's shooting stats against Turner and Sabonis this season. He did not score at all against Turner, and he has scored like on over 50% of his shots against Sabonis. Last week against the Spurs, we saw that Turner's defense is kind of important, and I know we always talk about it, but until you see it missing, you can't really see how valuable it is. Then they get him back for this game, and lo and behold, you see it again right away. Two steals, two blocks, deterred a ton of shots around the basket, was just amazing on defense in this game. Rudy Gobert on the other end, meanwhile, was 6-7, but they were all on lobs. He could not get anything going on an actual post game. No one was shooting well around the rim. Rubio, who went off against the Pacers last week, was 2-8. Joe Ingles, 4-6. Those were the two guys who probably dribbled to the rim the most. Turner was awesome, and on offense, where he's been more underwhelming this season, 7-8 from the field, only missing once, which was fantastic. So really overall a fantastic game from him as he returned from an injury, and that's exactly what you want to see from him. And on the injury report itself, his injury got changed. I don't even know if that's the right word, like transferred, downgraded, from an ankle sprain to a sore ankle, which I think is an improvement. So it looks like he'll be playing as much as he did today going forward. It was great to see that him doing well and playing the most minutes of any big on the team. So great stuff from Turner as he returned. He got Gobert away from the rim a little bit too, which was great. So I was encouraged by that. When he has these good games, it makes it so frustrating that he doesn't have it all the time. But I mean, shooting 7-for-8, given that he shoots 20 footers on almost all of his shots, is unreasonable for him. But moving on to another guy. Actually, you know what? I'm going to spend the next segment talking about two specific dudes who I think had an amazing game. So you'll probably figure out who it is because I'll skip over them in this one. But, I mean, I'm really just going to talk about some guys to highlight. Bojan Bogdanović I want to talk about in this section, though. Because they said this during the broadcast, and on the way, you noticed this, and it wasn't really crazy. But then hearing it all summed up blew my mind. That was his 11th straight game in double figures. And Bojan scores a lot. Like, I know that, and I see it happen, and it never surprises me as it's happening. But then hearing that just makes me think, like, man, he really has been really good on offense this year. His threes have been falling. He was 2-3 tonight. His overall ability to get to the rim has been better than any season from him I've ever seen. So he can really be a secondary creator. Like, we are all clamoring, as in the Pacers following community, we're all clamoring for the guy next to Vic who could be that secondary creator. And Tyreek was kind of supposed to be that guy, but Bojan has been that guy this year, which is kind of amazing. He had two amazing passes in this game, two off-balance passes that just zips right to perfect chest passes to teammates. He dove to save a backcourt violation. That was a crazy good effort play. He was just awesome and all over the place again. I love watching Bojan when he's having a good offensive game. It was really important. They needed it. I mean, they always need good offense with Vic out, but it was good to see. And then Tyreek Evans did nothing besides score, but, I mean, when they signed him to be a scorer, then that's all you need. He had 14 points as a starter, filling in ably for Vic, and he wasn't passing. Like, I tweeted before the game when they announced Vic was out, are we going to get ball-stopping Vic, or ball-stopping Tyreek, or ball-moving Tyreek? And I would go with neither. That's what we ended up with this game. He had one possession in the first quarter that was a disaster, where I think he dribbled for like 12 seconds of the shot clock and then got it stripped in the paint. At the same time, he was moving it okay. It just didn't necessarily lead to the final assist all the time. He was getting to the rim. He was 5 of 10. He only took 2 threes. So pretty good game. All you want from him is the 14 on 50% shooting with Vic out. And his defense was fine. And that, you know, his perimeter D was good. His interior D is not good. But when he's guarding Royce O'Neal, who has not much offensive creation at all, he can be effective, and he was, so that was good for him. Sabonis double-double. How many more times am I going to say that this season? He's been great. I wrote about his fouls yesterday. If you haven't read it, I encourage you to do so, and why I would like him to get his foul right down and how I would like him to do it. He had 4 in this game, and 2 of them were of the variety that I wrote about, where when he plays with Turner, me and Adam talked about this too, he has to guard someone on the perimeter, and he often gets beat, just poor footwork, being young, being out of position. Jay Crowder got him on a shot fake. He closed out too hard. Crowder beat him on one dribble, and Sabonis fouled him at the rim. It's like, you know, that's going to happen. That's growing pains. And it's hard to balance, like, hey, like, just let him have the 2 points so you can play more versus, you know, actually having him do it correctly and get it better. And then the other thing that happens in blowouts that I like to talk about because I am who I am. I'll do Aaron Holiday, too. Aaron Holiday was really good, 6 of 8. Didn't really do much else besides being 6 of 8, but he shot 6 of 8, and when your rookie is doing that well, you have to talk about it. That was all of his points were those 6 two-point makes, but I continue to be impressed and wrong about his play. He's been very good scoring the ball. He was a plus 16. Yeah, he's great. He deserves a spot in the rotation even when Vic comes back. So, yay, the Tony segment, the short Tony segment that only I love. Kylo Quinn played in this game. TJ Leaf played in this game. Edmund Sumner played in this game. And Ike Anibogu played in this game. Why do I love the end of the roster guys so much? It's so exciting. O'Quinn, 4.5 minutes, 2 assists. That's what he does. One of the best passing bigs in the league. Sumner was good. He hit a corner three. He had some electric dribble moves. He turned the ball over once because he was doing too many of them. But still, great to see that. Ike played, which is enough for him to have like a highlight. He never plays 2 minutes for him, too. He got a rebound and was a plus two, but didn't do much on offense. Still, Ike playing is a big deal. Like, he never, ever gets to play. He's with the Mad Ants a lot. He's only called up because Sabonis and Turner have been hurt. So the fact that both Sabonis and Turner ended up playing and Ike ended up on the court is fantastic. And then Leaf was not good shooting at all. He only took 1 3 off an O'Quinn pass, and he completely missed the rim. It was bad. But he got 2 rebounds. His rebounding has been better than last year this year, which is good. He needed to add more skills, so good to see that. Everyone else, besides the two guys I'm going to talk about in the next segment. So pretty much I skipped over. I'll give it away. The next segment's going to be about Darren Collison and Doug McDermott. So I skipped over Corey Joseph and Thaddeus Young. They were pretty much as advertised in this game. So yay, go them. They continue to be the glue guys that hold the team together. But yeah, I need to talk about DC and McDermott because they had outstanding games, and it needs to be talked about. So that was a great game for the Pacers. A lot of great stuff happened, a lot of good player performances. So yeah, let's talk about the two best ones and what it means going forward. So listeners, we have a new sponsor today that's actually super cool, and I'm going to tell a story first and then talk about it because that's how I do ad reads. So when I was younger, I made a Christmas sweater, where I poked holes in it, and then I had a spool of Christmas lights, and I stuck the lights through the holes, and there was a battery pack on it, and I would put the battery pack like out the bottom of my shirt and in my pocket, so I could light up my shirt by turning the lights on and off, and it was awesome. And now this sponsor comes to the Locked On Podcast Network and really hits home because I have this sweatshirt. I should tweet a picture of it out. Someone asked me on Twitter to tweet a picture of my light up shirt, and I will do it. But the product is from a great place called Action Heat. And Action Heat's idea, and I actually really like this because I'm not a winter guy. I hate the cold so much. They make battery-powered heated clothing. It's basically like a heated seat in your car, but on your body. It can reach up to 135 degrees, which is awesome. They're powered by rechargeable batteries that can last up to 12 hours per charge. And they have heated jackets. They have heated socks. They have heated gloves. They have undergarments. They got everything. It sounds really awesome, and I'm definitely going to try it. And it starts from stuff as low as just $39.99, which is awesome. And, of course, because it's the Locked On Pacers podcast, we can offer you a deal on clothes that heat up in the winter, which is literally amazing because it's snowing right now, which is awful. 20% off your entire order. Go to actionheat.com /lockedon. So that's actionheat.com/lockedon, all one word, to check out everything they can offer. And if you use that Locked On code at checkout from that link, you can save 20% on your first order. So even cheaper than that number I just said to you earlier. And you can try clothes that are literally like a heated seat in your car, which is amazing. What a great idea. I'm all in for this. I will be buying it and telling you all about it. So yeah, let's get back to the show, but check out Action Heat. It sounds awesome. Doug McDermott led the team in scoring. Like, wow. It's hard to even like fathom that thought given how the season has gone for him. It's been so rocky and up and down. Caitlin Cooper, head of the helm here, just wrote about him being uninvolved this morning. And I think she tweeted after the Spurs game, that's like his, it was this, after the last Friday's game, it was his sixth game with only 1 3-point attempt. They signed this dude to be a shooter and they're not letting him get shots. Not letting him is wrong. There's more to it than that, but he just wasn't as involved as he needed to be effective. Well, in this game, he got 13 shots. His previous season high was 9. He took 3 threes. He made 2 of them. He made all of his free throws. He had 6 rebounds. He had 21 points. Doug McDermott lighting it up. He had a nice dunk to start the fourth quarter. And he had 0 turnovers. His turnover percentage is shockingly low, like 5% or something. Absurd. He never turns the ball over. He doesn't make any negative plays on offense hardly. It's just that he doesn't get the ball as much as he needs to. But look at this. When you get him involved, he's a very good player. So great, great, great stuff from McDermott. And this is the type of performance you can build off of going forward. You know, you like one for McDermott's confidence. This is huge because now he has a game under his belt where he's like, okay, good. You know, I know with these guys I can succeed. I know when I'm feeling good, I know how to knock the ball down. I mean, I know he's done that his whole life, but I mean, it's a new situation for him, so you never know what's going through his head. And the team now knows, hey, I can trust this guy to shoot. Like, look, he led us in points and scoring and a win. Like, he was very good. So credit to McDermott, 21 points in less than 23 minutes. They needed that from him because he has not shown any signs this season, / the team has not given him the chance to show the signs that he's worth the contract that he signed this summer. So that was a very impressive performance, and really everybody needed to see it, the players, the coaches, even the people who just observed the team, because I think some people had soured on McDermott just as like a dead money waste, but this is what he can be. This game, obviously, they blew them out, so it's hard to narrow an impact on one guy and be like, yes, McDermott playing good made them win. But in a closer game, you know, this kind of thing where you have a spark shooter like this who has a bit of an inside-outside game, that's game-changing stuff. And now they know they can feed him the ball and he can do stuff for them. That's fantastic. Literally every possession it seemed like he was in, the first thing that happened was a screen for him off ball or him cutting. So that's great use of him. That's great use of his talents. I was elated to see him finally get in a groove and have a fantastic game. And the other guy I was also elated to see have a fantastic game for many, many reasons was Darren Collison. Many people have been suggesting to trade Darren Collison. I would not. I will do that rant before I talk about his game. So I will say this. There is merit to it. Holiday playing very good makes him expendable. And I would say he is the most likely Pacer to be traded this season. There is sense to it. Corey Joseph's been better. And you need give Holiday minutes to develop. But I think Holiday you can't count on every night. Like the last two games last week, he was not that great scoring, and he had some flaws that he clearly showed. He's a rookie. Like, he's not supposed to be good. It's okay. But the Pacers are trying to compete, and you need a good point guard on the floor to compete. And obviously there's mountains of evidence for this other than this, but to make it as simple as possible, Orlando Magic, Phoenix Suns, Sacramento Kings. The Suns haven't had a good point guard since the Dragic, Bledsoe, Isaiah Thomas hilarity season when they won 48 games, and then they didn't even make the playoffs, but they got rid of all those guys. They've been bad since then. You know, the Magic are starting DJ Augustine at point guard for like the third year in a row. They have been bad for a while. I don't even know who they had before that, but like Jameer Nelson was their last good point guard. Imagine that. The Kings, finally Fox looks good, and finally they look good. Like, sometimes it's that simple. And I am firmly in the camp that you need a good point guard to be a good team. The Knicks are another example of this, too. So even having no Collison on the floor for like 20 minutes and replacing him with a rookie, say Holiday has a good game, yeah, that's fine. But if he's a bad game, now you're in a lot of trouble. That hurts a lot. I still think, even in a down year, Collison's veteran know-how, he takes care of the ball. You know, he's just a good quality NBA veteran, is valuable to have on the floor. Just not having a bad point guard on the floor is very good. And then tonight, you saw what Collison could do. And that's what makes him not having the best season a little more frustrating. It's like, dang, I wish it was possible for him to put these up on a consistent basis. But 11 assists, no turnovers. Remember last year when he led the league in assist-to-turnover ratio, this kind of stuff. Not this good, but, I mean, these kind of things were more of the norm. And that was awesome for him. To see him setting up his teammates, passing the ball at the right time, all the while not turning it over at all, was great. 4 for 6 from the field, so efficient despite not making his only three-point attempt, 8 points. And 4 steals, he was very active on defense. I think it was his best defensive game of the year. I know steals are a bad barometer of defense, but actually looking like he had his active hands, he was all up in Ricky Rubio's face. Ricky Rubio, what did I say earlier, 2 for 8? Yes, was 2 for 8. He was really good on D. So between McDermott and Collison, two guys who have probably been struggling the most, I don't know if that's necessarily true, but two guys who have not been playing as well as many had hoped, finally having good games at the same time is huge. It just shows the team that they can still do it. It shows themselves they can still do it, which is great. You got to hope to see those kind of performances from those two guys going forward. But yeah, I was really excited to see those two guys play well. I think that means a lot going forward. Speaking of going forward, let's check out tonight's game. Back-to-backs are tough, but the Phoenix Suns are not. So let's chat some Phoenix Suns after this break. So the Suns are bad. The Suns are 4-15. Actually, since me and Adam talked, they lost by 11 to the Pistons. Talked about them that night. They were still playing when that was going on. And there is not a lot of great stuff going on with the Suns, but they do have the advantage of not being on a back-to-back and being at home. They're actually technically on a back-to-back, but it's their first game. But anyway, the Suns are not a very good basketball team. They don't have any creation. They are second to last in the league in offensive rebounds per game. They're 25th in defensive rebounds per game. Sabonis is going to eat them alive on the glass. They are 21st in three-point percentage. They're pretty low in free throw attempt rate. They just don't do a lot of the little tiny things that can make their team a little bit better. And that's because they don't have the guys who can do it. It's just that simple. They give up a lot of steals per game. That's the product of having a lot of young guards. Just a lot of stuff that's like just stuff that, you know they can clean up as they grow as a team, but they're not there yet. Devin Booker, still 22, which blows my mind. It seems like he should be older considering how accomplished he is. He's a very good player. But there are other guys, you know, Ayton, Bridges, Josh Jackson, Elie Okobo, all these guys who play decent minutes are just young and not, they don't have league acumen. Like, beyond skills, some of them have the skills. They just don't have the league acumen and the coaching and the pattern recognition and the stuff that really makes you complete as a player. You know, you hit your athletic prime at like 24, but your athletic prime doesn't decrease as fast as your IQ increases from like 24 to 28. And that's why you hit your prime at 28. So as their athleticism grows and their IQ grows, they get better. And IQ comes around a little slower. So that's why rookies start off so poor. But in this game in particular, I think that rebounding thing is going to be something to watch, because if the Pacers are tired legs, you know, Sabonis and Turner only played about half the game each against the Jazz last night. I think they both could be spry, and if the game is close and they need those extra possessions, I think you could see a lot of Sabonis. Ayton will not be able to handle him at all. Ayton has not been good on D. I think he has the worst defensive field goal percentage of centers. It might just be around the rim. I can't remember where I saw that. It's worse than Jokic's, though, who is notoriously bad in that stat on most seasons. So I think you might see a healthy dose of Sabonis against him, and I think Rashawn Holmes plays most backup center minutes now for Phoenix recently. Rashawn Holmes is a high effort guy, but he's a little shorter for a center, if I believe. I should pull that up before I confirm that for sure, but I'm pretty sure Rashawn Holmes is not that tall. Yeah, only quote unquote 6'10", which is not like so tall. No Tyson Chandler really hurts them in that way. Meanwhile, on the wings, Trevor Ariza, TJ Warren, good. Devin Booker, when he plays on the wing, good. Josh Jackson, terrible. And he's young too. Like, I think he's obviously going to be a good player. I think it's silly that, like, you know, advanced stats hate young guys because they're not impactful, but like people like write them off because of that. Josh Jackson, I think, will be good someday. But right now he's not. And Jamal Crawford is bad. We've known that for a long time. So going at those two guys on the reserve wing will be good. Vic's not going to play. I should have known that. I saw it before the game, but like I heard it on the broadcast for the first time and was like, what? So Vic was not going to play in this game. So McDermott's going to be the guy, another guy who could have a good game against the bench if he can repeat that performance again. And then I say no Vic because that means no Tyreek against the second unit he'll be starting. So you could get a healthy dose of Holiday, or if Sumner's still with the team, which it looks like he's going to be, I don't know why they would send him back in between days on a back-to-back, he could actually get some decent playing time to get some easy buckets against these poor defenders. If Phoenix is going to figure something out and get this done, they've been good with Devin Booker, point guard. I talked about that on yesterday's show as well. He's their best shot creator. I mean, that's obvious. Even if he's not like a necessarily a plus passer, he has gravity that creates opportunities for plus passes for other guys. That's big. That's big time stuff. So just having him at point, and it also allows them to have not one of their terrible point guards on the floor, and instead have, I think, Mikal Bridges is the guy that has really helped them glue it together. If they're able to figure something out with you know, Booker, Bridges, Ariza, Warren combo, you know, I think that's their best four guys right now, at least. Then yeah, they might be able to get something done, especially against the tired legs traveling two nights in a row Pacers team. But you know, you play the team in front of you, you play the schedule you have, like you can't count that as an excuse. I still think the Pacers can win just because the Suns' defense is so porous, and their offense is run really through two or three guys. So the bench should have a good one. I mean, this was their third game in a row, second game in a row of doing just that, the Jazz, and they played pretty well against the Spurs. So I look forward to this one. I think the Pacers are going to win it, though, just because the Suns stink. More than anything, like if it becomes a close game late, they're just going to win because veterans are better in the clutch than young guys. So I think the Pacers win. It's a pretty simple-minded thought I just had. Not simple-minded, not deep, or it's just too anecdotal for my personal preference, but I just think they're going to win. I don't. My gut says that they're obviously the better team. The record indicates all that. And then my gut just says it. So I'm putting them together to say, yeah, they're just going to win, which would be great. I mean, I think on the road trip, 2-2 would have been a fine result. They already beat the Jazz. So if they're able to do what I think they can do against this one, I won't be disappointed by my many results to Lakers and the shockingly not terrible Sacramento Kings, who we'll talk about later in the week. But that's what we got for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed last night's awesome win. It was very, very fun. I'm writing a lot this week because I didn't write that much last week, so be on the lookout for stuff. Yesterday I had a post on the Pacers' struggles getting free throws, their free throw attempt rate, which I think is more concerning than their poor percentage, as well as something on Sabonis' fouling, which I talked about earlier in this show, and I did the player grades from the game because I like writing too much, apparently. Follow the podcast on Twitter at LockedOnPacers, all one word. We just hit 700 followers yesterday. I really appreciate you guys checking out the Twitter account. We really should tweet more than just the show. I think that would be very fun, but it's very fun to interact with you guys on there. We reply to everybody who tweets at us, so feel free. And yeah, that's all I got for today's show. Adam will be talking about this game tomorrow, and I'm sure a little bit about the Lakers or something. And then we'll have another weekly show Thursday, so be on the lookout for all that stuff. Another weekly show. There's two of them this week, but anyway. Yeah, have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you guys soon.